from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. With day one of Obamacare enrollment fast approaching, states are facing choices. Oregon is using folksy music to promote its new health insurance exchange. Washington State has ads about snowboarding. In Florida and Missouri, lawmakers are regulating who can and cannot answer questions about signing up for new coverage. And in the nation's capital, efforts to defund the whole thing. This hour on Point, Obamacare, state by state. And you can join us on air or online. Is your state doing its own exchange or going with the federal one? What ads are you seeing where you are? Or are you just completely confused? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first this hour from Washington is Noam Levy, national health care reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He used to cover Congress for the paper, and he's keeping a close eye on the politics of all of this. Noam Levy, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
So what's the status of the Affordable Care Act in Washington right now?
Well, I'd say it's unclear. As you know, and I'm sure your listeners know, Republicans have been trying to cut off funding for the law almost since the time it was signed, and we seem to be careening towards another showdown over funding for the law. The House Republicans have indicated that they will link a piece of legislation to fund all of the federal government to a cutoff in funding for the new health care law. That vote could happen as soon as this week, maybe tomorrow. If the House does do that, there's almost no chance at all that the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats, would approve such a measure. So the Senate would probably strip out any language in such a piece of legislation that would cut off funding, and that would leave us at a bit of an impasse.
So here's this is sound from a press conference yesterday. House Speaker John Boehner talking about the Affordable Care Act. He called it a mess.
The law's a train wreck. The president has protected American big business. It's time to protect American families from this unworkable law. There should be no conversation about shutting the government down. That's not the goal here. Our goal here is to cut spending and to protect the American people from Obamacare. It's as simple as that. There's no interest on our part in shutting the government down.
So, Noam Levy, here we go. House Republicans, as you say, demanding that the president cut all the money out of the Affordable Care, cut out all money for the Affordable Care Act. They're voting on a government spending bill that defunds the law. If they can't win support, they want to shut down the government then. How likely is it that this measure will lead to a government shutdown?
Well, I think there's growing anxiety in Washington that that we may be looking at some kind of a shutdown. I mean, as you know, over the last couple of years, there have been quite a few walks towards the edge of a cliff here between congressional Republicans and the Obama administration over funding the government, over raising the debt limit so the United States can pay its debts. This is not the first time we've done that, but I will say that I think there's more anxiety, I think, today than we've seen in a while that there may not be a way out of this. Conservative wing of the Republican Party in the House, the Tea Party and so forth, has enormous amount of influence in that chamber. And you're seeing now organizations on the outside, such as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a traditionally conservative organization, issuing warnings, which I think is an indication that there is fear here that both the government may shut down and then subsequently that the debt limit may not be raised. And if either of those two things happen, particularly the second, I think there are going to be some real problems. Mm.
At the Business Roundtable headquarters in Washington yesterday, President Obama said that Republicans' efforts to block Obamacare using the debt ceiling are unprecedented.
You have never seen in the history of the United States the debt ceiling or the threat of not raising the debt ceiling being used to extort a president or a governing party and trying to force issues that have nothing to do with the budget and have nothing to do with the debt.
Noam Levy, is he right? Has this sort of situation happened before?
Well, it did happen just last year, the year before, I guess. But before the sort of current round of showdowns between Obama and the House Republicans, no, it hadn't really happened like this before. We are still, I guess, in somewhat uncharted territories. And of course, the backdrop to this is that at the same time this is happening, we're less than 2 weeks away from the healthcare law actually rolling out. So I think things could get even more complicated if we get to October 1st, these new insurance marketplaces open, people begin trying to sign up for health insurance.
Right. So what does that, mean for states and the implementation of the law? Haven't some states already received money from the federal government to run their exchanges, to run the program?
Billions of dollars they've received. I think the states that those states, there are 16 states in the District of Columbia that are running their own marketplaces, probably continue to be able to do that. Because of the complex way that the federal government's funding is organized, if the government shuts down benefits such as Medicare, Social Security, and presumably some of the benefits that come through the Affordable Care Act would still be available to Americans. So they would be unaffected directly by a shutdown. But of course, government funding bills fund government offices and employees. So if there is no government funding bill and employees who are running these marketplaces out of Washington, which they're doing for, you know, some 35 states, then there is an open question about sort of how that can be, how those exchanges, those marketplaces could be run on with employees being furloughed and so forth. So it's quite complicated, and I hate to say it, but not entirely clear.
Mm. Noam Levy, thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Sure. Happy to be with you.
Noam Levy is national healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He spoke with me today from Washington. Joining me now, also from Washington, is Jenny Gold. She covers the healthcare industry for Kaiser Health News. Welcome to you, Jenny.
Thank you so much.
So first, help us understand some of the language of the Affordable Care Act. It's frankly quite confusing. What exactly is an exchange? What would it do?
So an exchange is basically an online marketplace where consumers can go on and see their options for health insurance. Those insurance products have certain rules attached to them. They have a central set of benefits. So if you go on and you buy a plan, you know you're getting a certain product at a certain level. Now, you're going to have a lot of options on there. You can buy plans at different levels. If you want to pay a lower premium, you can choose a plan that would cover less of your medical costs and would have a higher deductible. If you want to go all out and get a really quality but expensive plan, you can get what's called a platinum plan that would have a much lower deductible, but it would cover more of your medical costs if you had a major medical event.
So the implementation of all this then of these exchanges is still unclear, as we just heard from Noam Levy. But I guess the question is when the Obama administration drew up this Affordable Care Act, they assumed that even states who opposed it would prefer to run their own exchanges instead of letting the federal government come in and do it. But in reality, it hasn't turned out that way. So tell us what's happening instead, Jenny.
Right. So that was a pretty big shock for the administration. I think they all thought the Republican governors would prioritize states' rights and want to run their own marketplaces and regulate their own insurance markets. But actually, as it turned out, their dislike for the law seemed to override their states' rights concerns. And they decided to let the federal government go ahead and run those online marketplaces we just talked about. But the law wasn't set up to allow that. So basically, the law provided sort of like an entitlement program's worth of funding for states to set up their own exchanges. As long as they could validate, you know, could verify that they actually needed the money, they could have an unlimited stream of funding to help set up the marketplaces, to advertise them, to get people to enroll, do outreach to consumers. But that law wasn't written for states to have the federal government run the exchange. Nonetheless, 34 states decided to default to the federal exchanges. Those 34 states have a really limited pot of funds to implement the law and the exchanges. So, for example, you know, the federal government had to sort of pull from all sorts of pots of money to cobble together $67 million for all 34 states to do navigators, to have navigators. Those are like the on-the-ground army of Obamacare enrollers. They're reaching out to consumers on the ground out of churches and community centers and soup kitchens. They only have $67 million for a total of 34 states, some of which have the highest levels of uninsured in the country.
Right. So that's what that's what jumped out at me when I looked at that list, that many of the states that are not promoting exchanges have some of the highest rates of uninsured residents.
Oh, we're talking about Texas and Florida. I mean, those really are the biggest uninsured states.
So what's the biggest challenge then for the Obama administration as this is slowly rolling out? Is it to convince states to do it themselves now, or have these states just decided and then the stakes in the ground?
I think at this point, at least for the next year, this is how it's going to be. We've got 27 states that are completely federally run exchanges. We have seven what are called partnership exchanges. So they're doing maybe some of the consumer outreach, but the federal government's really running them. I mean, this is how it is. And the biggest challenge at this point is for the administration to get people to actually enroll. They're hoping to get 7 million to enroll in the exchanges in the first year. That's going to be really difficult.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're looking at the Affordable Care Act this hour, Obamacare, and how states are approaching the looming October 1st enrollment rollout. Well, Oregon is one state that's actively promoting its state's health care exchange. Here's some sound from Cover Oregon, the state-run health exchange, running advertisement featuring local singer-songwriter Laura Gibson.
Each logger and lawyer and stay-at-home dad, every baker and banker and indie rock band, each student and teacher and neighbor and friend will live long in Oregon.
We're talking with Jenny Gold this hour. She covers the healthcare industry for Kaiser Health News. Jenny, talk to us about some of these campaigns nationwide, state by state.
Well, what I love about that Oregon ad is it's so Oregon. I mean, it's just sort of got that folksy, almost Portlandia thing going on. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the states are kind of trying to really do that. They're trying to put their own brand on it. In Minnesota, for example, they've got Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox as their mascots.
We actually have it. So let's listen to it.
Okay,
Here it is. Minnesota's state-based health exchange developed this series of ads, as Jenny said, featuring famed lumberjack Paul Bunyan.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. Whoa! Whoa! Oh, oh, oh.
Minnesota, land of 10,000 reasons to get health insurance.
Babe, little help!
Welcome to Minsure, the new way to shop, compare, and choose from a variety of health insurance companies to find the coverage that's right for you.
Babe, get your blue ox over here!
Minsure, where you choose health coverage.
You couldn't see it, but you could hear Paul Bunyan. He was water skiing, I guess, Jenny, in that ad.
Right. He water skis right into a grove of trees. Two things to keep in mind with these advertisements. The first is that you're only seeing them in states running their own exchanges. So we talked about before, they're only in states like Washington, Colorado, California, states that are running their own exchanges and tend to be Democratic. So far, we haven't seen ads in the states with federally run exchanges. So that's the first thing to keep in mind. The second thing to keep in mind is you can kind of tell who the audience is in some of these ads, and it's clearly young people. You've got another ad from Washington State where you've got a snowboarder. I mean, these are clearly supposed to be targeting the young and healthy people. And that
right. And why is that really the biggest,
what they have to do.
And why is that important for the Obama administration to convince young people to sign up for coverage?
So basically, the administration knows that if you are older, you're sicker, you have a health problem, you're probably going to sign up for this if you're uninsured. You're waiting for these exchanges to go online so you can get affordable coverage. If you're young and healthy, maybe you're not so interested in buying coverage. You've got other expenses. You're not really thinking about a medical emergency when healthcare coverage might really, really kick in. But from the exchange pool's perspective, from the administration's perspective, those young people are needed to keep premiums down. So the way it works is you've got a pool of everyone who's got health insurance. If you've got mostly older, sicker people, they have higher costs. So the premiums would be higher. You need those young, healthy people who aren't going to have as many medical costs to come into the pool to average the average cost of a premium out and become lower. So if the administration wants affordable premiums, they're going to have to convince in some way those young, healthy people that it's worth it for them to buy coverage.
So we've heard from Oregon and Minnesota, some of the many states that are happy to implement Obamacare, but many states are trying to block implementation altogether, Jenny. Some states have laws that say anyone in a state-funded agency cannot even talk about the Affordable Care Act. So speak
That's
to those
right.
states.
So, I mean, you've got states like Missouri and Florida, and they are really obstructing the law's implementation. They don't want people in state agencies to even discuss the law. They don't want them to help people sign up. They don't even want navigators, those on-the-ground enrollers, to be in the same buildings as a state agency. So they are looking for any way possible to sort of obstruct it. And Florida even went a step further. Florida banned the insurance commissioner from regulating insurance premium rates for 2 years. Those are the critical years for the Obamacare going into effect and making sure premiums are low. So premiums probably are going to be higher in Florida. And that means not as many people are going to sign up.
So let me bring in a voice from one of those states of which you speak. Joining me now from St. Louis, Missouri, is Ryan Barker, Vice President of Health Policy at the Missouri Foundation for Health. He's working on outreach to get residents signed up for the federal exchange. Ryan, welcome to you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So Missouri voters passed a proposition last year restricting state agencies that might have helped Missourians figure out Obamacare, figure out the exchange. So groups like yours, I guess, have taken on the task of doing that?
Yeah, Proposition E was on our ballot last year, put on there by state legislators. And the first thing it did was ban the governor from setting up an exchange on his own without permission from the legislature. And then it also restricted any state departments or governmental entities from talking about it. So in Missouri, where the hands are tied of our government entities, and so the private sector has really had to step up. The foundation has pulled together a coalition that has grown to 270 members right now of nonprofits and academia and healthcare professionals from across the state. So we're doing our best, but it is a tough environment without having state departments helping.
So how is outreach going then, broadly speaking, when you actually contact people or when they come to you? What's the reaction? What's their response?
Yeah, we at the foundation actually have been doing educational meetings for over 3 years on the Affordable Care Act. So we've done about 300 meetings across the state. There's just a lack of information. People just don't know and are desperate for information. So it's been amazing because we keep thinking these requests for presentations are going to tailor off. And they don't. We just keep getting more and more, and especially as we get closer to this October 1st start date.
So how are things different then for Missourians in a state that's choosing to default to the federal exchange, just in a very practical, pragmatic way? How are things different there?
Yeah, for states that have the federal exchange, there is the federal website is where you're going to go, is healthcare.gov. So any state that is a federally run or a partnership exchange, so our neighbors, Illinois and Iowa, do have partnership exchanges, you go to healthcare.gov. The state-based exchanges have a specific state website for the exchange.
Okay. To your mind, is there anything beneficial that might come from the implementation of Obamacare in your state?
I think there is a lot that will be beneficial, especially for people who are uninsured. We have an uninsured rate around 15% for adults. And there's a lot of people trying to shop for insurance on the individual market. We're very optimistic looking at some of the other state-based exchanges that have announced rates, that we may see plans that are much more affordable here in Missouri. And out there in the community, as I'm talking to people, there are a lot of community members that are excited for new options around affordable health care.
Ryan Barker, Vice President of Health Policy at the Missouri Foundation for Health. Thanks for joining us, Ryan.
Absolutely. Thank you for
having me. Appreciate your time. Jenny Gold, so when Ryan said there's a lack of information out there, I think that's an understatement. I mean, I'm looking at polls here. The Wall Street Journal NBC poll out this week found that those most likely to benefit from the health care law are largely unaware of it. Among the uninsured, 76% of respondents said they didn't understand the law and how it would affect them. Only 32% of the uninsured thought they would likely use the exchange. So what's going on there?
This is a huge problem. This is a really complicated law. Healthcare is complicated overall. I mean, it's one of the most complicated issues, but it's also one of the most issues that people care about the most. And the Obama administration has really dropped the ball here. I mean, they just have not at all explained what this law is to the general public. The fact that even people who are uninsured and are going to benefit from it have no idea what it is really a problem. And to be honest, I'm surprised at this point that we're not seeing the administration out with a megaphone, that we're not seeing maybe the vice president or even the president out on in a motorcade across the country trying to explain what this thing is. This is the legacy program, and they're just not really pursuing it.
40% of Americans think the Affordable Care Act was repealed by Congress or overturned by the Supreme Court. Do you see that number going down after October 1st, if indeed this is implemented?
Well, I think we can assume at this point it's going to be implemented.
Okay.
The exchanges are opening in 2 weeks. This thing is moving forward.
All
Even
right.
if it's defunded for some reason in Congress, there's still some leeway. There's still some money to move forward. So I think we can assume the exchanges will be taking people for enrollment. So I think we can assume that.
Let's go to a caller here. Robert is in Columbus, Georgia. Robert, you're on the line. Welcome.
Thank you. The reason I was calling, I thank you for the discussion this morning, but I have in my hand the Sunday Atlanta Journal, September 8th, where the Georgia Commissioner of Insurance is doing everything in his power to stop this. And I'll read a portion of it, if I may. Key provisions of the law began to take effect in 22 days, and Hudgens, who is Ralph Hudgens, the insurance commissioner for the state of Georgia, is refusing to lift a finger to smooth the way for a new or to help or to enhance consumers to make sense of it. Instead, he is launching scorching broadsides against Obamacare.
So what are your thoughts about all this, Robert? Are you angry about this? What are your feelings?
Oh, I am extremely angry for the following reasons. First of all, this is a law that was implemented by both houses, and then now the people who implemented it, they themselves have health care, federally funded health care for themselves and their families. And now those who are needy, unhealthy, uninsured are having a problem with this, and you have states who are not helping to make sense of it and to make it clear and giving, and it's so opaque that no one can understand it.
Robert, thank you so much. Jenny Gold, I mean, I think that comes down to the bottom line of the issue of confusion, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people do not know what this thing is. And I think at this point, we need to be telling consumers what's in it and what's in it for them and
so
what they need to do on October 1.
Here's a question from Matt from our website. I hope you'll talk a little bit about what happens when states like mine, Wisconsin, who didn't set up their own exchanges and have to use the federal healthcare site instead. What do we do? Does it have all the same features? How does it?
That's right. It has all the same features. You're going to go to healthcare.gov and pick your state, which is Wisconsin, and you'll actually stay in that portal. It'll ask you a series of questions. You'll need to put in your what you think your income's going to be in the next year, your social security number, your address, et cetera, and they'll spit out options for you. And they'll also tell you whether you qualify for a subsidy to help you purchase on the exchange. In that case, the government will actually pay your insurer directly the portion that they're subsidizing, and then you're going to pay the remainder.
Jenny Gold, let's throw Medicaid into this complicated calculus. Are some states expanding Medicaid under Obamacare?
Right now, 26 states are moving forward with the Medicaid expansion, and that's a constantly moving target. In the past week alone, we've got two more states expanding, Michigan and Pennsylvania. So basically, let me sort of lay this out. This is what it means. For people under the law, for people who make up to 138% of the poverty level, you will qualify for basically free government health insurance under the Medicaid program. This is new. It used to be in most states they were providing it maybe up to 70, 80% of the federal poverty level. That's sort of 100% is around $15,000 for an individual and $26,000 for a family of three. So, you know, it used to be that very few childless adults could get it. Now, up to 138%, everyone's supposed to be able to get it. But the Supreme Court said that that provision was unconstitutional, that you couldn't force states to expand Medicaid. So what you ended up with is a lot of the Republican governors decided not to take up the expansion. So in those 26 states where you are seeing a Medicaid expansion, everyone qualifies for some sort of health insurance up to some sort of help paying for health insurance up to 400% of the federal poverty level. And for people up to $15,000 for an individual, it's totally free. But in states that did not move forward, that's 22, 25 different states, mm-hmm. there's no help at all for those people at the very bottom end of the income scale. Anyone up to 100% of the federal poverty level is not going to get help buying health insurance. They do not qualify for Medicaid unless they already qualify in their state.
And so what's the incentive for states to expand Medicaid?
It's a huge pool of money coming their way. The government is paying for, I think it's 100% at first of the extra costs that it takes to cover those newly eligible people. That peters off to 90%. So it's a lot of money for states. But some states, like Mississippi, say, we can't afford it anyways. We can't afford that extra 10% in the coming years, and we're just not going to expand it at all.
Let's get another call in here from Norman, Oklahoma. Audra is on the line. Audra, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I live in a state, I live in Oklahoma, which has completely refused Obamacare funding. However, I'm 24 years old, and I'm already seeing some of the benefits of the Affordable Health Care Act in that my father can continue to insure me. Without the age extension to 26, I would be completely uninsured. Even though I work a full-time job, I don't receive any benefits whatsoever. So even though I live in a state that isn't going to have any kind of state-run program, I'm already seeing some of the benefits from the federal government.
Audra, thank you. I'm glad you called. I guess, Jenny Gold, the most important thing for consumers who are interested is to know if this new law actually applies to them.
Absolutely. And it doesn't actually apply to all that many people, is the truth.
Who does it apply to then?
It applies to people who are uninsured or people who purchase coverage in the individual market. So that means you right now are going out and buying your own insurance through a broker, through online, some other way. It also applies to people in small businesses. And again, if your employer isn't offering you coverage at all and you're uninsured, this also applies to you. But who it does not apply to, and this is really important, Medicare beneficiaries, seniors, do not purchase health insurance on the exchange. There's a lot of confusion about that. In addition, if you already have employer insurance and it's fairly reasonable, you also would not qualify for a subsidy on the exchange, and you're better off staying with your employer plan. The only caveat to that is if your plan is so expensive, if it takes up the premiums alone take up more than 9.5% of your income, you may be eligible for a subsidy. In addition, if that plan your employer offers has really lousy benefits, and they don't meet the Obamacare mandate for an essential set of health benefits mm-hmm. in an insurance plan, you also may qualify for a subsidy on the exchange.
So anyone who buys health insurance on their own or who has a small business, someone who's been going without insurance, should be paying attention at this point.
Exactly.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're looking at the implementation of Obamacare, less than 2 weeks away now, and how it's being implemented across the country. I'm speaking with Jenny Gold this hour. She covers the healthcare industry for Kaiser Health News. And joining me now from Olympia, Washington, is Michael Marchand, Director of Communications at the Washington Health Benefit Exchange. Washington State is doing a state-based exchange and expanding Medicaid as well. Michael, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane.
So let me play some sound first out of the gate here. From your state, Washington State, TV and radio ads began airing this week. This one features a snowboarder who exemplifies the dangers of going uninsured.
This one's about a snowboarder who knew no fear until he found himself gambling with chance. It was the last run of the day when Brody took a nasty spin. But time stood still when she appeared upon that hill. Well, she's 3 foot tall and looks sweet as a pea. But Brody realized, uh-oh, she wants to draw cards with me. And without health insurance, that's a dangerous game. Because if she pulls a joker and he lands all funny, this game of chicken could cost a whole lot of money. Too bad, since at Washington Health Plan Finder, finding new low-cost or free insurance is easy.
Michael Marchand, so it's a humorous ad. What was your strategy when you were thinking about how to advertise the Washington Health Benefit Exchange?
So the strategy from the very beginning for us was to create something that was not conventional, not something people would expect from the program as they know it and a lot of the rhetoric that they've heard. And also we wanted to cut through the noise to connect with an audience who essentially, for most part, has given up on finding health insurance, really believes that they're not going to qualify or can't afford it, and in some cases believe, frankly, they just don't need it. Health insurance isn't important to them. They don't understand the value proposition.
Hmm. So what's the response? What kind of feedback are you getting from consumers about both advertising and the exchange itself?
The response has been great here in Washington State. The ads have only been up for a few days, but already have received very positive response. The exchange in Washington Health Plan Finder as a whole, I think a lot of what you've covered earlier, a lot of people have a lot of questions. And I think that people's responses to it are kind of still in that wait and see mode. You know, they want to learn more. We've just got our toll-free call center up and we're fielding a lot of questions. We got over 1,000 questions literally on the first day. And I think as people become more attuned to what the opportunity here is with a new marketplace, new products, and a new way to find things that better fit your needs and budget, they're warming up to the idea of being able to shop here.
So you've got advertising on television and radio. You've got a call center set up. What other outreach strategies have you implemented?
So we've been very aggressive with instilling lead organizations around our state. So we have 10 lead organizations that we've provided grant dollars to that are essentially our in-person assister organizations. And they've built out a network of over 100 partners all across our state. We're also taking a lot of time in providing training. We've trained more than 1,000 agents and brokers to also assist with facilitating enrollment and raising awareness, answering questions of those individuals who may be coming in the door with questions about whether or not they should be looking on Washington Health Plan Finder for coverage. And then finally, you know, again, you mentioned our customer support center, call center. We're getting a ton of questions. Whether they're in English and Spanish and other languages, we're handling them all. And we just continue to do our due diligence to make sure that we get everybody to understand what's going on, because the degree of separation between an individual who's insured and someone who's not in this state is probably one, because we have 1 million uninsured, roughly 15% of our population. So most of us know someone who could benefit.
I'm just curious, unlimited funding was set up essentially for states to advertise and set up these healthcare exchanges. How expensive has it been? How much federal funding have you received?
We've received, I believe it's somewhere north, I mean, for the whole exchange of about $160 million for operation, and that's going back to, we established our exchange back in 2011. So we've been up, we were way ahead of the curve as a state in terms of developing systems and infrastructure. And, you know, our outreach and enrollment campaign efforts, just our creative and advertising budget for this year as well as next year, is somewhere in the $13 to $15 million range. But again, that has to cover our open enrollment this year and all the work we're going to have to do through next year and next year's open enrollment period.
Do you see any downsides to the implementation of Obamacare in your state?
Probably the, you know, the biggest downside is the fact that, you know, because of the Supreme Court case and because of the presidential election and because of the talk of repeal, the reality is that the ability to kind of have a clear, uncluttered path to discuss what's going to happen in the opportunity, the window's only been about 3 to 6 months. And even in the last couple of months, I wouldn't even say it's been that clear. So it's been disappointing to try to combat so much misinformation when really so many people will have the opportunity to benefit what's in the ACA.
Michael Marchand is Director of Communications at the Washington Health Benefit Exchange. Michael, thank you so much for your time today.
Yes, thank you so much, Jane.
Let's go to the phones. Jenny is on the line from Tunbridge, Vermont. Jenny, did I get that right? Welcome.
Yes, you did. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you. We're fortunate in Vermont to have a health exchange, and my concern is everything I'm hearing says that people need to access the health exchange through the Internet, and a lot of the most vulnerable people, the people who really could benefit from these laws, do not have access or are not comfortable with the Internet. So I'd like to see how that might be addressed. I also would like to see information posted, very, very simple information, saying maybe something like, do you buy your insurance now? If so, you can benefit from this law, and have those leaflets passed out in pharmacies and doctor's offices. I'll take my your comments off the air.
Jenny, thank you. Go ahead, Jenny.
This is a great question. We always mention healthcare.gov, but that's not the only way you can get help. There's also a hotline. The federal government has a hotline for federally facilitated exchange dates in 150 languages. You can get help signing up. So you can call and get help that way. They can walk you through the enrollment process. If you're in a state like Vermont that's running its own exchange, that state's going to have its own consumer hotline. If you go into a doctor's office, but more likely a pharmacy, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens, they're all going to be passing out pamphlets about the Affordable Care Act. I think something that we sometimes forget to talk about is that in addition to all of the Obamacare workers who are going to be getting the word out, the navigators, et cetera, all of the industry has a huge incentive to get people signed up. Insurers, hospitals, pharmacies. This is new business for them. The insurers want to get you signed up for their plan, and the hospitals and pharmacies want to make sure you have insurance so they're not having to give so much free care. They want you to come in with coverage so you have a way to pay. So they're going to be doing a lot of outreach as well. If you walk into a community health clinic, a hospital, they've got people there to enroll you as well. And you can even sign up directly with an insurer if you prefer.
And so, Jenny Gold, what's the deadline then to sign up?
This is a great question. We keep talking about October 1st, and while that's the opening day for the exchanges, that's not really the most important date for consumers. The most important thing is that if you want coverage beginning January 1st, you need to sign up by December 15th. That's the big day for consumers. December 15th, enroll by then, and you will have insurance beginning January 1st. You can still sign up through January, February, and March, but your insurance coverage won't start until, I think, a week or so after you actually enroll.
Back to the phones. Betsy is in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Betsy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you. I have a question regarding assets.
Okay.
I'm someone who's 58 years old. I'm currently unemployed, although I've worked my whole life. I took the COBRA insurance until it ended so that I could be sure to get a guaranteed issue private policy. And so, theoretically, I can't be canceled for pre-existing conditions, and it was a grandfathered plan under the law.
Okay.
And so my question is, am I eligible because I own my own home and I'm currently, although I hope to go back to work, I'm having to use retirement savings to live on and to purchase private health care insurance. I don't have, like, serious medical issues from the past, but I know because I used to be an employee benefits manager that if there's any way a private insurer can connect something you've had in the past. So,
I hear you, Betsy. Thank you. Jenny Gold, I'm glad you called.
So basically, if you have a COBRA policy beginning in January, you can have an exchange policy instead. You can switch out of that COBRA policy. And one of the most important parts of the Affordable Care Act is that they can't no longer charge consumers more or reject them because they have a pre-existing condition. So you're going to be in the pool with everyone else based on your age. Your premium will be based a little bit on your age, but otherwise it'll be about the same as other folks. It's not based on so your eligibility for Medicaid or the exchange under the Affordable Care Act, under Obamacare, it's not based on your assets. It's based on your income. I know there's confusion over that because sometimes with Medicaid, there's been a spend down provision where you had to sort of spend down your assets or they counted against you. But in this case, you can qualify for a subsidy based purely on your income.
Here's another question from Anne in Denver, Colorado. Anne, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Briefly, I currently am self-employed and buy my own health insurance. I'm wondering if there's a risk in moving to the exchange. Should it be defunded, or should the Republicans get their way, or should I be concerned?
Anne, thank you so much for the call. Jenny Gold, what's your response? Is there a risk involved in switching to an exchange?
That's a fair question. As far as I know, I think you should feel safe signing up for the exchange.
Here's Marianne in Middletown, Connecticut. Hi, Marianne. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a unique catbird seat because I produce a show on health reform and innovation, so I'm immersed in the information. And thanks so much for the work that your guest does, because she really does help inform us. I'm actually based at a community health center in Connecticut, which is one of the states expanding the health insurance exchanges here. And the insurance navigators, we hired a team of the most brilliant young, committed, dedicated people to be our navigators, to be the people, the boots on the ground, helping our population, 130,000 of the underserved in the state of Connecticut. You know, when I hear the complaints coming from the right about money being spent for these navigators somehow being nefarious in any way, these are dedicated, committed, mostly young people, bilingual people, people who are able to really explain it. They've been immersed in getting to know what this law is all about and how to navigate the exchanges. And, you know, I urge people in states that haven't expanded their insurance exchanges to go to their community health centers. That's where those grant monies have gone, to help train navigators who will be your boots on the ground. If you don't have access to the internet, they'll make sure that they help you with that. So those people are on the ground, even in states that aren't expanding, creating their own exchanges,
right,
or expanding Medicaid.
Marianne, thank you so much. I appreciate your call. Jenny Gold.
I think just to add to that, it's going to be community centers, it's going to be hospitals, pharmacies, all these places are going to have help for you to sign up. In addition, I think there's going to be navigators and programs reaching out to you. In Connecticut, that's a great example. That state's been way out ahead trying to get people to sign up, trying to get names and numbers of the uninsured. They're going to rock concerts to get people signed up. That's a great way to find young, healthy people. Setting up tables, trying to educate people. Over the summer, they went out to the beaches and they handed out sunscreen that said, get covered. These states that are actively moving forward, I don't think that the administration needs to be real concerned about them. I think they are going to go out and get people to sign up. I think the states where you're going to see a lack of enrollment is probably states that are not running their own exchanges, that have the federal government running them. And honestly, the federal government is really stretched thin here.
Isn't there a little bit of buyer beware here as well, Jenny? I mean, we haven't talked about the fraudulent activity that could be looming in the midst of a big new government program. I mean, be on the lookout a little bit for that?
Absolutely. The White House met yesterday with the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice to discuss the risks that might come along with this. You could have a fake navigator come out and try to get your personal information. Seniors are especially vulnerable to fraud. There is, however, going to be lists of the organizations that are that have the navigator grants online, both in states running their own exchanges and on healthcare.gov for the federally facilitated exchange states. So you can check against that. You can make sure that the navigator you're seeing is safe. If you go to a community health center, you know that person's been trained to handle sensitive information. Now, to be fair, what the Republicans are saying is, hey, there isn't enough background checking. There isn't enough fingerprinting going around of the navigators to make sure that they are totally safe, that they're not going to steal your personal information. Some states have implemented laws requiring navigators to get a background check. Others have not. But the administration is saying, you know, really, this is not the biggest concern. The people that we are hiring to be navigators, these trusted community organizations, we can trust them to hire people who are safe. They're doing their own checking. They're calling references, et cetera. You can trust that if you go see a navigator, they're going to be safe. You can also probably put your own social security number in when you're doing the enrollment process in with a navigator. That's another way to just be 100% sure that your personal information is going to be protected.
So last minute here, Jenny Gold, here we are in the brave new world of healthcare reform, I guess you'd call it. What are your words of advice, your thoughts at the end of this very detailed conversation? So much in this, a lot of confusion still across this country.
I think the most important thing here is that consumers know there's still a lot of politics being fought out in Washington, but that doesn't mean that the health law isn't moving forward. It's happening. It's being implemented. And while it may not really affect you, if you're uninsured or you have an unaffordable policy or you're purchasing your own coverage, this probably has something in it for you, especially if you earn anything under 400% of the federal poverty level. That's $46,000 for an individual, $94,000 for a family of four. So go ahead, go on healthcare.gov and find out what might be in this for you.
Jenny Gold, we really appreciate you navigating us through this hour today. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it very
much. Thank you.
Jenny Gold covers healthcare industry for Kaiser Health News, and you can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow this hour, our weekly news roundtable. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.